Hello, and welcome to Nice News. This is a broadcast about some very interesting topics. I'm Joyce Vesper, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. On Nice News, we cover information from all over the world on various topics. The program provides a time out from the daily news that doesn't always cover the happiest of topics. So please give us a listen. Who knows what might give you a laugh or cause you to remember something from another era, or even pique your interest, such as this article by Scott Mulligan. Google's DeepMind's new AI model is the best yet at weather forecasting. Research represents a shift in how we may predict the weather. Google DeepMind has unveiled an AI model that's better at predicting the weather than current best systems. The new model is dubbed GenCast. This is a second AI weather model that Google has launched in the past few months. In July, it published details about a model that combined AI with physics-based methods like those used in existing forecasting tools. That model performed similarly to conventional methods, but used less computing power. GenCast is different. It relies on AI methods alone. It works sort of like ChatGPT, but instead of predicting the next most likely word in a sentence, it produces the next most likely weather condition. In training, it starts with random parameters, or weights, and compares that prediction with real weather data. Over the course of training, GenCast's parameters begin to align with the actual weather. The model was trained on 40 years of weather data from 1979 to 2018. It then generated a forecast for 2019. In its prediction, it was more accurate than the current best forecast, the Ensemble Forecast, or ENS, 97% of the time. It was better at predicting wind conditions and extreme weather, like the path of a tropical cyclone. Better wind prediction capability increases the viability of wind power because it helps operators calculate when they should turn their turbines on or off. And better estimates for extreme weather can help in planning for natural disasters. Google DeepMind isn't the only big tech firm that is applying AI to weather forecasting. NVIDIA released ForecastNet in 2022. And in 2023, YY developed a Pangu weather model, which trained on 39 years of data. It produces deterministic forecasts. Those are those that provide a single number rather than a range, like a prediction that tomorrow will have a temperature of 30 degrees Fahrenheit or 0.7 inches of rainfall. GenCast differs from Pangu weather in that it produces probabilistic forecasts, likelihoods of weather outcome, rather than precise predictions. For example, the forecast might be there's a 40% chance of temperature hitting a low of 30 degrees Fahrenheit, or there is a 60% chance of 0.7 inches of rainfall tomorrow. This type of analysis helps officials understand the likelihood of different weather events and plan accordingly. These results don't mean the end of conventional meteorology as a field. The model is trained on past weather conditions, and applying them to the far future may lead to inaccurate predictions for a changing and increasingly erratic climate. GenCast is still reliant on the data set like ERA5, which is an hourly estimate of various atmospheric conditions and variables going back to 1940. Says Aaron Hill, an assistant professor at the School of Meteorology at the University of Oklahoma, who was not involved in the research. The backbone of ERA5 is a physics-based model. In addition, there are many variables in our atmosphere that we don't directly observe, so meteorologists use physics equations to figure out estimates. These estimates are combined with accessible observational data to feed into a model like GenCast. New data will always be required. A model was trained up to 2018 will do worse in 2024 than a model trained up to 2023 will do in 2024. In the future, DeepMind plans to test model directly using data such as wind or humidity readings to see how feasible it is to make predictions on an observation data alone. There are still many parts of forecasting that AI models still struggle with, like estimating conditions in the upper troposphere. While the model may be good at predicting where a tropical cyclone may go, it underpredicts the intensity of the cyclone because there's not enough intensity data in the model's training. The current hope is to have meteorologists working in tandem with GenCast. There's actual meteorological experts that are looking at the forecast, making judgment calls, and looking at additional data if they don't trust a particular forecast. Hill agrees it's the value of human beings being able to put these pieces together that is significantly undervalued when we talk about AI prediction. Human forecasters look at ways more information, and they can distill that information to make it a really good forecast. Scott J. Mulligan wrote, "Google DeepMind's new AI model is the best yet at weather forecasting." Robin Marks writes, "The surprising effect of stress on your brain's reward system. Some people bounce back from trauma, but others get caught in depressive loops that sap the joy from their lives. Now scientists at UC San Francisco are learning how the brain creates these divergent experiences. They hope it will help them find a way to treat those who struggle with long-lasting symptoms of stress." The researchers found that stress changes activity in a brain circuit in mice. These changes distinguish the mice that will recover from the ones that won't. They stimulated some of the neurons in the less resilient mice to make the neurons fire more often. The mice stopped ruminating and sought out pleasure in the form of sugar-sweetened water. Seeing that we can set these brain signals back on course in mice suggests that doing the same in humans could act as an antidepressant. The stress of indecision. Kirbeck, a member of the UCSF Weill Institute for Neuroscience, set out to find the signature with a team that included Francis Shai, Ph.D., an associate specialist in psychiatry at UCSF, and two scientists from Columbia University, Valerie Fascianelli, Ph.D., and Stefano Fusi, Ph.D. The researchers looked at a brain region called the amygdala, which helps to evaluate how risky it may be to seek a reward. First, they observed brain activity while the mice were resting. Stress had changed the activity in the amygdala of the less resilient mice much more than it had in the resilient ones. When the researchers gave the mice a choice between plain and sugar-sweetened water, the resilient mice easily chose the sugar water, but the less resilient mice became obsessed and often opted for the plain water. She looked at brain or recordings of the mice who chose the sweet water. Their amygdala was communicating with a nearby brain region called the hippocampus that remembers and predicts. She saw a different pattern in the mice that could not decide whether to drink the plain or the sweetened water. In those mice, the conversation between the two brain areas sputtered. Chi thought she could stop the mice from ruminating and improve their decision, making if she could get the neurons that connect these two regions to fire more often. She used a technique called chemogenetics, which employs artificial molecules that interact inside the body. The team attached one of the molecules, a receptor, to the surface of the neurons in the hippocampus to make them fire. Then she injected the less resilient mice with a second molecule that bound to the receptor and made the neuron fire. When the team once again gave the rumination-prone mice a choice of waters, they took the sweet treat. The mice's brain activity also looked resilient. "The whole thing seemed like a wild idea that I almost couldn't believe that it worked," she said. "The process actually wiped out the whole state of indecision and turned these guys into resilient mice." The team plans to look at human brain data to see if they can find similar signatures. Kirbeck is working with researchers at the Dolby Family Center for Mood Disorders to explore different ways of changing these brain patterns. There's considerable interest in finding out how we can translate these discoveries to an approach that will work in people, he said. "If we can do that, we'll have a new, non-invasive way of treating depression." This article written by Robin Marks, The Surprising Effect of Stress on Your Brain's Reward System. Now here's a very interesting story, at least I think it is. It's by Robert Greenall. World's oldest known wild bird lays an egg at age 74. The world's oldest known wild bird has laid an egg at approximate age of 74, U.S. biologists say. Wisdom, a Laysan albatross first filmed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at the Midway Atoll National Wildlife Refuge in the Pacific Ocean, with her latest partner looking after the egg. Members of the species usually only live for 12 to 40 years, but Wisdom was tagged in 1956 when she was about 5. Her last offspring hatched in 2021. She is thought to have more than 30 chicks in her lifetime. The United States Fish and Wildlife said that on X that Wisdom was the new partner this year and that her previous partner, Akia Kamai, had not been seen for several years. The species generally mates for life, but she's already thought to have outlived at least 3 mates. John Plissner, a supervisory wildlife biologist at the refuge, said that Wisdom was one of 2 to 3 million Laysan albatross who traveled to Midway to breed. He said biologists were unaware of other birds even close to her age, the oldest being 45. It's been remarkable, he said. Wisdom seems to pique the interest of people across the world. We wait each year with bated breath for her return. He said Wisdom still appeared to have the energy and instincts to raise another chick, and there were about 70 to 80% chance of the chick hatching. Albatross parents share incubation duties, and once the chick hatches, feeding duties as well. Wisdom was first identified and tagged in 1956 after laying an egg. Laysan albatrosses are not known to breed before the age of 5. Midway Atoll is part of the Hawaiian archipelago, but does not fall within the United States of Hawaii and is described as an unincorporated territory of the U.S. The wildlife refuge is home to the largest colony of albatross in the world. Robert Greenall wrote, "World's oldest known bird lays egg at 74. Well, here's another world's first. This article written by Stephanie Friedman. The world's first flying electric ferry is coming to Lake Tahoe. Lake Tahoe is famous for its mesmerizingly clear opal water and the pine and fir trees lining its rim, all against a backdrop of snow-capped mountains. But soon you may see an arguably even more impressive sight darting across the lake's surface, the first ever flying ferry. Thanks to a partnership between local organization Fly Tahoe and Swedish technology company Candela, a fleet of the world's premier hydrofoiling electric ferries is set to debut on the water as early as the end of 2025. Called the Candela P-12, the vessel can transport people, bikes, and ski equipment across the lake in just 30 minutes, half the time it takes to drive to the same destination. The ride will be smoother than it would be on a typical ferry as well. That's due to the ship readjusting a whopping 100 times every second, reducing the risk of seasickness. This fusion of flight and hydroelectric technology not only unveils a powerful new business opportunity with nearly 10 times operational efficiency, but also offers an unmatched customer experience of comfort and safety. Fly Tahoe founder and CEO Ryan Meinsner said in a press release. Plus, we'll not just be moving people faster, we'll be boosting socioeconomic mobility by connecting the north and south of the lake. Candela's hydrofoiling electric ferries themselves are a sight to behold. Steered by computers, underwater wings effectively lift the ship's hulls in the air, which makes them look as if they are levitating. They can travel at up to 25 knots or nearly 29 miles per hour. The Tahoe fleet is expected to cart 300 people across the lake every day via 6 round trips. But beyond their exterior beauty and convenience factors, these ferries boast another benefit. They're better for the environment than traditional water taxis because they're launched by renewable energy instead of diesel. They're zero-emission models that consume 80% less energy. They also don't require oil changes, reducing the risk of spills, and they're significantly quieter than traditional vessels, causing less stress to wildlife. Considering that 20,000 car trips are conducted around the full length of the lake each day, new ships are an exciting first step into what the future of energy-efficient water transport could look like. It's ironic that while millions, myself included, drive around Lake Tahoe to admire its beauty, the road sediment we generate contributes to the largest threat to the lake, the famous cobalt blue clarity. Meinzer said in the press release, "Our service will provide a faster transport than cars or buses while keeping the lake blue." And while these ferries are a first for Tahoe and the United States, there already seems some success in a recent launch in Stockholm. In late October, the first electric hydrofoil ferry, dubbed Nova, sped 15 kilometers, a little over 9 miles, from a Swedish suburb to Stockholm in less than 30 minutes. Candela founder and CEO Gustav Hasselgaard dubbed the trip a paradigm shift for urban transport and a revival of our waterways at a time when the capital city's current water-based public transport uses more fossil fuel than its trains and buses put together. Conventional ships haven't evolved much in 100 years and are among the least energy-efficient transport modes, only rivaled by a battle tank. Apart from traveling to Sweden, if you're eager to climb aboard these innovative ferries that appear to fly on water, you can get a head start by signing up for the Fly Tahoe waitlist. This article, written by Stephanie Friedman, the world's first flying electric ferry is coming to Lake Tahoe. Listeners, here's a question for you. What do octopus have to do with human teeth? This article, Octopus Suckers Fix Dentures in Research First. So there's your answer. Scientists are harnessing the power of nature by mimicking octopus suckers to help dentures stick to the mouth. For the first time, tiny suction cups have been designed into 3D-printed dentures. That's helping them to stay in position. The research could help the 11% of the UK population who use a denture and the 350 million people of the world who have no natural teeth at all. Dentures remain the most common treatment for people who lose their teeth, particularly with age. Other options include dental implants, but these are expensive and not always available for people. Many denture wearers will now know the challenge of getting dentures to stay in place, known as retention. People often are reliant on supermarket denture adhesives used to glue dentures back in place, but this option is unhygienic and unpopular. To improve the situation, an interdisciplinary team of scientists at King's College London explored how they could replicate the same process which enables octopuses to stick to slippery surfaces in dentistry. Octopuses have suction cups in their tentacles, which create a negative pressure and a vacuum, creating strong suction to fix them to rocks. The team theorized that similar suckers could be added to dentures, allowing them to fix to the soft mucosa of the mouth. They designed 3D printer models using computer-aided design, known as CAD, of upper and lower dentures. When the models were analyzed, they showed greater retention than standard dentures, though thankfully not so strong that users couldn't remove them from their mouths entirely. The models had twice the amount of retention as normal dentures. The scientists from King's Faculty of Dentistry, Oral and Craniofacial Sciences then explored how chemical changes could be used to fix dentures in place. With dentures made from plastic, they showed how covering them with a thin lining of keratin, the same protein found in skin and hair, forms a chemical bond with the keratin of the skin in the mouth, known as the mucosa. This further helps retention and is also invisible to the eye, not impacting the look of the dentures. Computer simulation of dentures with the octopus tentacles that inspired them led author Dr. Sharif El-Shaharki, King's College London, said, "Having worked with denture wearers, who I often see in the clinic, for several years, I really wanted to improve their experiences. I first had the idea to replicate the sticky surfaces in nature while biting into a peach. I noticed how the furry skin stuck to the palate of my mouth and decided to investigate other sticky surfaces in nature. Octopus suckers seemed like the perfect place to start. This research bridges nature and technology to tackle a long-standing challenge for denture wearers. By mimicking the ingenious adhesive strategies found in the octopus suction cups, we have developed a prototype that offers improved grip and comfort in even the most demanding oral environment. Our findings pave the way for a new generation of dentures that can transform the quality of life for millions worldwide. This article, Octopus Suckers Fix Dentures in Research First. Tom Howarth writes, new tuberculous cure could come from fungi found in U.S. bogs. Fungi from U.S. peat bogs may hold the key to the new tuberculosis treatment, a new study revealed. Researchers from the National Institutes of Health identified fungal compounds that could pave the way for shorter, more effective TB treatments. The findings, published in the PLOS Biology Journal, point into an innovative strategy for combating a disease that afflicts millions annually. Every year, tuberculosis infects millions globally, with over 1 million deaths despite the disease being both preventable and curable. In the United States, some 8,000 people were infected with the disease in 2022, with TB coming in behind COVID-19 as the second most infectious killer. The number of cases in the United States has been steadily declining since 1992, but has increased the following the COVID-19 pandemic, according to the latest data for the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Disruptions to healthcare services and changes in migration travel disruptions were cited as likely contributors to the increase, but the trend highlights the difficulty in eradicating the illness that has blighted societies for centuries. TB is an infectious disease spread by bacteria affecting the lungs. It's spread through the air when infected patients cough, sneeze, or spit. Exiting treatments require months of daily antibiotics, posing significant challenges for patients and healthcare systems. The need for shorter, more manageable therapies is urgent. The research team turned to Spagin peat moss bogs in the northeastern U.S. in the environmental-rich area with competitive microbial species. These wetlands mimic conditions found in TB patients' lungs, acidic, low in nutrients, and oxygen deprived. This similarity prompted the researchers to investigate how fungi in these bogs fight Mycobacterium species, the same bacterial genus that includes Mycobacterium tuberculosis, which causes TB. Fungi have an enormous repertoire of secondary metabolites that can produce, and they have millennia to select which ones are right for the challenge. In this case, what was amazing was that the three unrelated fungi converged on the same solution. They all produce different substances that have the same effect, and they only produce them when they are exposed to Mycobacterium tuberculosis. In laboratory experiments, the team co-cultured Mycobacterium tuberculosis with 1,500 fungal species collected from the bogs. They identified 5 fungi with toxic effects on the bacterium, isolating 3 key compounds, patulin, citrin, and nidulin A. The substances disrupt thiols, a critical class of molecules essential for bacterial survival. These compounds, like most natural products, are not directly useful in humans, and they wouldn't be able to be taken orally. This is not unusual for natural products, starting points for drug discovery. Although these compounds were not suitable as drugs themselves, the discovery offers a promising path forward. Targeting thiol-regulating processes in TB bacteria could lead to treatment-shortening therapies. The parallels between the bog environment and TB lung lesions strengthen the potential of this approach. The next steps are to identify compounds that have the same effect but have better pharmaceutical properties. The good news is we already have candidates that hit this line, and they have the same mechanisms and are pretty far along the path to human rituals. This article, New Tuberculosis Cure, could come from fungi found in the United States bogs. The article was written by Tom Howarth. We're getting close to the end of the program, so here's your thought for today from Oscar Wilde. We are all in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars. In 1892, St. Thomas Theatre in London staged the first performance of Oscar Wilde's four-act comedy, Lady Windermere's Fan. The play's wildly improbable plot, following an upper-class woman who suspects her husband of having an affair, didn't stop it from becoming the Irish playwright's first hit. Theatergoers loved it, especially Wilde's characterly, dazzling dialogue. The play gave us many of the most quotable lines, including, "I can resist anything except temptation," and "Life is far too important a thing ever to talk seriously about it." But the most famous quote is the one spoken by Lord Darlington to Mr. Dumby, a man who thinks all people are good. His simple but poignant observation about hope remains one of Wilde's most succinct and beautiful lines. "We are all in the gutter, but some of us are looking up at the stars." Oscar Wilde. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of Nice News for today. I hope you enjoyed the readings, and I invite you to join us again next time when we cover some very interesting and unusual topics on Nice News. This has been Joyce Vesper, your volunteer broadcaster for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Stay healthy, everyone. Be well. Be happy. Bye-bye.